It's time for the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show on KSCO.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Good afternoon, everyone.
You're not supposed to do that on the radio.
Well, you know, I was following my cues for Dr. Future, and then should I be on? Well, I guess I'm on a little bit before,
huh? It's going to be that kind of a day today, huh? The red light means warning, honey.
Yeah.
It means,
yeah.
You know, right. Now's the time to...
It's Raw. It's us. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show, Mrs. Future. Oh, she has had her birthday this weekend. We celebrated. It was a lot of fun.
I'm still on cloud nine.
Yeah. She just got her fat tire bicycle for going along the water. Yeah. It should be a lot of fun.
Yes. Thank you, honey.
Yeah.
You sure know what I like.
Hey, we got Bobby in San Francisco.
Yes, yeah. Happy birthday. I'm so sorry. I couldn't make it down there. It was a lot of things came up. I apologize.
Well, it's okay, Bobby. You know, we usually have parties that go late into the night and usually get there late and stay late.
But this one ended about when you usually wake up,
on
Bobby.
The beach in the day.
Yeah.
So, apology accepted. Yeah. I would have loved to see you, but
we'll
make it go when things are more normal.
Yeah. Happy birthday! Wow. So, tell me, what?
It was fun.
Oh, you can see on Facebook, I think.
Yeah, our face plant. Okay. Yeah. You know, has a few. Maybe I'll put some on the Dr. Future page too. We include our audience a little bit. Yeah. The second hour is going to be exciting. We're going to have Miss Adventure on.
Yes, Jess Phoenix.
Yeah, Dr.
Really
Jess Phoenix.
Really great book on geology and Vulcan chasing.
Yes.
Volcano chasing.
Volcano chaser.
Wow.
Yeah, she teaches down at UCLA, and she took some time out of her schedule to talk to us about her adventures in volcanology.
Yes, Ms. Adventure.
Yeah, it's her new book. On the topic.
Wow.
Yeah. Should be a lot.
That's the second hour.
First hour, we got a few items. One was the press conference this morning from NASA. The whole crew were involved with the Ingenuity were on stage.
That's right. All eyes on Mars.
Ingenuity is the craft, the helicopter craft.
That's right.
That's going to be flying soon.
The Martian drone, I call it. It's a helicopter, but it's a remote
control. It's not a drone. It's a helicopter.
It has counter, what do they call it? Counter rotating propellers that are moving as fast as a jet engine.
Well, they go much faster than Earth's propellers because the atmosphere is 1/100th as thick, so you have to really chop it. Mm-hmm. Boy, if anyone needed anti-gravity, it would be the Martian helicopter. But as it is, it has special blades that go something like 2,600 revolutions per minute.
Right. Yeah, they keep trying different kinds of transportation inventions there. My favorite was the airbag bumpers for landing.
Oh, that was fun, wasn't it?
Sort of reminds me of the Disney movie, actually. Flubber.
Yeah. Boing, 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 boing. Hey, we landed. It'd be funny if we saw aliens do that.
Right.
Boing, boing, boing. Ooh, hi, who are you? Well, for us to know, you to find out. Well, so it was really a really cool little meeting. You had a chance to meet some of the folks there. The entire budget just for the helicopter was about $80 million.
Wow.
R&D.
Not even a seat for a passenger.
Well, for a $3.5 billion craft, it's not too bad.
Right.
It's considered a test vehicle in a
That's
way.
That's right. Yeah, it's a scientific data collector.
Yeah, a flight demo. So that'll be coming soon. Everyone's real excited about it. They're getting ready for it. And it's going to fly about 15 feet up, not that high, relatively close to the ground, and scout ahead a little bit, see what's around. And they have, I think, something like 30 flights planned for it.
So many new beginnings.
Yeah, so that should be much fun.
One of the things in the press conference that they were saying is that this is not the first aerial explorer on another planet, because apparently there were some balloons that were used with cameras on earlier missions to Venus or Mercury by the Soviet space program. They had to give due credit this morning in the press conference. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what's great about scientists is that they do respect and compliment each other on their work quite often. You know, you think about Venus. Venus has a thick atmosphere, right? So it should be easier to fly.
It's pretty hot, though.
I know. It's hot. That's the problem.
I think the blades would melt. Yes.
Yeah, now you need to have special kind of super tempered material that can handle 1,000 degrees plus. I think it's only 800 degrees there. You know, so I think some steel doesn't melt until 1,200 or so.
Right.
So we should be able to fly something. And it could be really short, stubby little blades compared to the super long, fast ones on Mars. But they're not thinking of that for Venus. I think they're thinking of it for one of the moons of the gas giants. There's an atmosphere. I think it's Titan, maybe, where they're going to be able to fly something like this. So that's fun. That was great. And I have on our links page where you can listen to the folks involved with the craft.
With the Martian experiments.
Ingenuity. Yeah. Also of interest in the space world lately, there's a company called Astroscale. Essentially, they've created one of the first low Earth orbit, shall we say, dump trucks. Yeah. It's a special kind of craft that delivers end-of-life services for satellites.
Oh, for satellites.
So your satellite dies, and, you know, what are you going to do? You take up valuable satellite space, or are you going to get rid of it? And so you call Astroscale, and they send in their end-of-life services craft, which can dock with your satellite, take off important stuff from it that you might want to save, and then push it a little bit into an unstable orbit and send it crashing down, clearing the orbit out for the next satellite.
So we're entering a new era in near-Earth space, which is trash collection.
Well, it does two things. It fixes it as well. If it can fix it, it's going to have some ability to repair satellites and some ability to get rid of it.
I'll tell you, this satellite looks a little bit like a tailgate party. It's a box. It looks like an ice chest you could pop open. You know? Oh, yeah. It's got some solar panels folded out.
Well, it's an ambitious project. It's a demonstration that the company hopes to commercialize to show that this is actually a viable service and that people should pay them to fix and or destroy their satellites.
Waste management, look out. You got some competition in space.
Yes. It's got a ferromagnetic plate on it to assist the servicer with mag locking procedures. It's cool for a garbage truck. You know, it's really nice.
All right, so it's on a demo mission, huh? Making sure that people know what it can do.
It's contracted with JAXA, the Japanese space agencies, to help do some orbital debris there. And
they're going to try and remove some large objects?
Yeah. Yeah, they are. And one of them is a spent upper stage of a launch rocket.
Sounds like this is a demo of a spent upper stage of a launch rocket.
It's all demos. Purposes the Ingenuity is a demo, too, of the
concept.
Satellite.
Yeah.
Hey, it's a demo. Don't worry about it if it fails. It's just a demo.
We're just at the proof of concept stage here.
Right.
We're making history. Yeah. Don't expect too much.
That eliminates a lot of judgment. Demo.
Space junk.
Right.
No more.
No more. Hey, we got to go to a commercial.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
Yeah, be
right back. Thanks, Dr. Future.
Okay, a little bit Mars news, but I believe we have a caller, Mrs. Future.
Well, we've got Nick in Royal Oaks. Always has something to add to the Dr. Future show. Hi, Nick.
Hey, Nick, what's on your mind today?
For us?
I hope so. Well, who is, first of all, who's SLS?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
SLS?
Yeah, they seem to have the largest, strongest rocket right now.
Space Launch System?
There you go.
Yeah, government, NASA is putting together.
So they call themselves SLS?
I believe that's a shorthand for their launch system.
So it is, it's a government.
Is that the Lockheed people?
SLS launch.
Are they the ones that strapped the rocket to the Earth and blew off like 36,000 gallons?
It's a super heavy lift expendable launch vehicle.
Is that the one they did? They strapped it to the Earth? How they tested it?
Strapped it to the Earth. Yeah, I think that's the one that didn't quite take off. I think that's the one they were, yeah. They,
you know, how I'm thinking of putting them out of business?
What's
since the moon faces us always, one side.
Yeah.
We could put a tether on it. And then just bring it right to the Earth, and we'll strap one up and pull it up.
You mean just attach to the moon and have like a space elevator going to the moon from the Earth's surface?
Yeah, some cable. A cable, the other cable.
Because it seems to be stationary. Well, the moon does move in the sky, you know. It's not staying in one location.
We could call your agency the NIC Space Agency.
Yeah. But, you know, the space elevator is a viable concept, and it can be done without actually having to go all the way to the moon. That's a long way.
I mean, we could call this project NAC.
NAC. NAC. Nick NAC. Nick's NAC. That's
Nick's
great.
NAC. Nick NAC.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now for a true Nick NAC reality idea.
With the rocket improvement, how are they getting on fuel economy? I mean, is it pound for pound? Are they, like, getting, like, 20 pounds out of 1 gallon or... Is it improving?
You're getting 20 miles to the gallon? Or
no, I mean, well, no. One pound per pound.
Pound for pound?
When Alan was a kid, he did play with rockets. So he does have some concept of putting in the fuel to make it go.
Well, I use Estes Industries model rockets. Let's see. In the real world, the Falcon 9 can launch a payload of 13,150 kilograms with a takeoff weight of 505,850 kilograms. It comes to about $10,000 a pound, approximately.
Currently.
Yeah, $10,000 to put a pound of payload into Earth orbit.
Okay.
So that's a lot of cost, and it's got to be worthwhile, at least at this point in time. So, into other news this week, there was something involving Mars that was kind of interesting. There was a plan unveiled for a first sustainable city on Mars. And it's this architecture studio named Abibo, A-B-I-B-O-O. They had plans, and I believe Elon Musk was part of that. It wasn't totally his creation, though. But this architecture studio created a study of where they're going to begin construction in 2054, located on what's called the Tempe Mensa, the city of Nuwa, with a population of 250,000 people. Now, what's interesting about their plan for the Martian city is that it's located inside the rock of a steep cliff, as opposed to being on the surface under a dome or in a cave or lava tube. And it was specifically chosen, the Tempe Mensa, because the area offers protection from radiation while still providing access to indirect sunlight. Mm-hmm. Sunlight, an important source of energy. And they envision that all tasks on the planet will be performed in what they're calling macro buildings, which are found inside the cliff, and you access them through an elevator system. They also have a train and bus system, which will help you commute from one side of the facility to the other.
Oh, so they're going to take the boring company equipment over to Mars?
Well, that's probably a good idea.
Build the city underground?
Yeah.
Well, of course, with those horrible windstorms, you'd think that makes a lot of sense.
They also think that crops can be grown on the side of cliffs as well.
Right. Yeah, I noticed last week you had an article we didn't get to about how there's some bacteria that's been discovered on the space station that they're working with to see if they can improve plant growth in space.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very important, as good 50% of our diet is going to be stuff that are grown in such a way.
Right.
On the Mesa.
And not just our diet, but also the stuff that you breathe when you're on another planet has
yes.
to be exhaled from plants.
Yeah, they covered that very well, I thought, in the Expanse series.
Yeah, I thought so too. Really beautiful graphics and all of these wonderful window vertical galleries of plants that were being used as air filters
yes.
in the story.
I think it was the Ganymede station.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ganymede was a perfect place for doing plant research.
Right. And the idea that in the area above the greenhouses on the surface of Ganymede, mm-hmm. they had suspended giant mirrors that were focusing the sun and increasing the amount of sunlight being distributed on the surface of Ganymede.
No doubt essential when you're that far out from the center.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some really interesting creative thinking going on in the
they've thought about the tech of world. Have you seen that series, Bobby?
Yeah, I saw a couple of those. They were amazing. Yeah, I mean, beautiful sci-fi. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, this Abibo Studio one?
Yes.
I mean, it's like...
it's like
yeah,
a
it's
movie.
First class. It's like a movie trailer, you know? And it's like sci-fi like 100 years from now, but... They're saying it's only 50 years, but with the trees and these amazing structures on the side of this crater hill.
I think it's coming faster than we realize. I saw a tweet, I think, from Elon Musk that seemed to be inside of a dome in zero G, and there was a weightless dancer with the Earth and the moon in the background.
Oh, that's cool.
That sounds like the cover of Star Dancer. You see that? It's a science fiction book about a photographer and his love for his dancer, who was the first dancer to specialize in zero gravity dancing.
Well, we know. We've documented some of the people who actually have made that their life. We worked many years ago with Frank Petronegro.
Yes.
For some of the events at Yuri's Night, which featured the space artists.
Yes, he was a zero gravity
artist.
Space
dancers.
Zero G artist.
Right.
He used to go up in the KC-135 Vomit Comet.
Right.
That would...
Yeah. Was that at Moffett Field?
That's right, yeah. Yuri's Night was at Moffett Field.
Yeah, I was there.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah. Our buddy Ron Reisman, who used to, may he rest in peace, was a scientist who helped guide us through that morass. It's quite an interesting place. Yeah. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have a caller, Mrs. Future?
We do. We have Steve at the Yacht Harbor calling in. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Hi, Futures. Hey, listen, you know, I went and visited that big crater in Arizona. You probably know the one I'm talking about. It's enormous, and...
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know, Bobby?
Yes, it's
Dr.
called
Dr. Future's
crater.
Googling right now.
But
Meteor Crater?
Anyway, Meteor Crater, that's it. That's it.
Yeah. 37 yeah, miles like, east of Flagstaff.
2 miles across or something? Yeah, it's pretty big.
Yeah, right, it's near Flagstaff. So So I went and checked it out. I was driving by it.
Yeah.
I was the only person there. It's not a huge tourist draw. I was like the only person there. I mean, I sat there and had lunch, you know, and walked around it. And I thought, you know, we really need a good asteroid hit. You know,
that kind of thing.
Really? You think that would help our society out somehow?
Yeah. The virus wasn't enough for you. Is it more dramatic to you?
This is my theory.
Uh-huh.
It's one thing they can't blame on Trump. And
they can blame anything on Trump.
They would try. I'm sure they would try. But it would unify the world, you know. It's like, boom. Hey, what was that?
All right, well, we got to go. But where would you want it to hit? Where would you want it to hit before we go?
Same place is good. You know, out there in the desert.
Yeah, some middle of nowhere.
Yeah, they're already prepared for it. Not too many tourists. No big damage elsewhere. Just to make a statement.
Nobody really noticed anything, dude. It doesn't notice.
That's great. There's a plan for unifying the planet.
I like it. Thanks, Steve.
Is that 20 is behind
hold
us.
On. Hold on if you want.
Construction
got
help
break.
You unmask.
Yeah, here we are. Flying away. By the way, the Meteor Crater is also known as Barringer Crater, and it is privately owned.
Did you know you were trespassing, Steve?
Listen, you guys, there's something I've always wanted to ask you. There's a lot of talk about, that NASCAR concept of mine, that crater concept of mine,
yeah.
I want to call it Planetary NASCAR, like a little bump from the competition to keep things going.
Keep us united on a common front here.
Yeah. Now, the Mars thing, you know, there's a lot of talk about Mars, and you made an important statement earlier about it cost $10,000 to move a pound.
Yes.
And they're talking about putting 250,000 people on Mars. So in reality, no, I mean, we're keeping it real here. And Mrs. Future likes to err on the side of reality.
Unlike me.
Why? Well, why don't... Okay, so this is the clincher.
Yeah.
This is Future, Dr. Future. Mm. Why don't they develop the moon a little bit? Why don't they start with developing the moon? The moon's really close, and it's, you know, we can see what's going on up there. We can enjoy it. We can get to it easily. Why don't they start with developing the moon?
Well, the moon has its fan club.
Well, they are. The first big project is putting a space station in orbit around the moon rather than Earth, which is a step in that direction. And it's easier to put things in orbit than it is to land and take off on the surfaces of planets. It takes a lot of energy to get down to the surface and off again. Not as much as from Earth, of course, but still, it's energy intensive. So if you're going to put a place on the surface of another planet as barren as the moon, you want to put it near where there's maybe some resources like water. That's why the South Pole is so popular as a potential location, because if it's water...
Well, there's Mars. Does Mars have more potential as far as better weather and water?
Yeah, it does. It does.
It has atmosphere.
Yeah, it has an atmosphere, yeah. Unlike the moon. Now, not to say we couldn't create an atmosphere of the moon.
That would be much harder.
We don't think about terraforming that much yet, except in science fiction. Mm. But
can you remind me the temps on Mars, like the daytime, nighttime temps on Mars?
It's cold.
Yeah, it depends on where you are.
It's not colder than Antarctica.
It depends on where you are. There's the equator area, and there's the poles, just like here. And you can go down to 195 degrees Fahrenheit on Mars, which is, I don't know
pretty
if it gets anywhere
cold.
That cold on this planet.
Halfway to absolute zero.
It has dust storms, vast dust storms that could cover the equivalent of many states and last for months. But we're optimistic that it is habitable over time. And as I've often said, it's a fixer-upper. it's not a planet where things are ready to move in.
It's got good bones.
Yeah, it's got good possibility. And I think what it will teach us is a lot about how an ecosystem works and how to, in order to make a better atmosphere, we really have to understand how planetary atmospherics work. And that would teach us a lot about Earth atmosphere in the process. Because, it's more of a... It's interesting because, scientists study the way things are and the mystery of existence and mystery reality, while engineers will maybe make things from scratch. So if you have no atmosphere and you start to make one, then you understand it from a creation point of view rather than a reflective point of view. And that is very...
So Mars has some material... Has some material to work with, where the moon has no material to work with?
Well, they both have material to work with. It's just different. One of the things they were hopeful on the moon is that there would be a hydrogen-3, which could be used as a fuel. Food, I believe, as well. There's ice also, and there may be other types of minerals on the moon as we explore its geology.
Mm. And they're pretty convinced there's water there.
Yeah, they know there's water there in certain locations. And also inside a lot of the craters, there seems to be frozen water. There are craters that never see the light of day, and those have solid caches of water.
Are you optimistic we'll get a human on there?
Oh, yeah. But, we're at a time in history where we're evolving humans, too. I mean, we're evolving. We'll reach an understanding of biology. We'll adapt our biology to suit an environment. So no doubt if families move to a place like Mars or even the moon, your body will start adapting over generations and even faster with the help of our technological tools for adapting bodies to live comfortably in these disparate environments.
That's pretty exciting. I agree with you on that, too, as far as the evolution of the human, because I'm actually seeing politics. Our politics actually has to evolve to fit that, too.
Oh, it does, yeah. It'll push politics. And politics often has to change depending on what's going on with our capacities.
Yeah. People like going to new frontiers so they can make up new rules because they don't like the old rules anymore.
Yeah, we were thinking about that earlier today, that there's just a certain group of every generation of people
petty
that need
tyrants.
To make up the rules, and that's why we get rid of them so that new ones can be made because certain people just need to make rules.
I love your show that we can cover lots of different topics and explore them. Thanks, you guys, so much.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Always appreciate good it. From you. Take care.
You know, the other possibility besides the surface of a planet is, of course, in space, and there are a lot of advocates of creating environments in orbit of other planets.
Starship and, Enterprise.
Yeah, like a rest areas in space.
Right.
That the destination doesn't necessarily have to be a surface of a planet.
Well, which would you rather do? Homestead on another planet or get a deluxe suite in an orbiting spaceship?
Well, my ultimate dream, I would say, would be to communicate with the Gaian mind, the human connection with the planet, talk to the Earth about whether or not the Earth has sisters in the galaxy, and then find out.
You want to meet the Earth's sister?
Yeah, I want to meet her sister. Yeah. You know, because I've got a body that's suited to Earth, right? And it just would not be very comfortable anywhere else.
Oh, yes, but your DNA has billions of years of evolution recorded.
I don't mind my DNA going out in other forms to other planets, but I don't, you know, I would like to actually see if the Earth maybe knows how to move matter between other Earth-type planets, whether or not they have a network, if you will, of communication with themselves.
Oh, is the Earth talking to the other Earths like the mushrooms are talking to the other mushrooms?
Well, yeah. Gaian minds talking to other... Well, yeah, it makes sense. I mean, it would seem to me like the universe would do that if it were truly alive.
Let's ask...
we got a caller?
Let's ask Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Mark. What do you think?
What I think is pretty nonsensical. You were talking earlier about salvage and recovery in space. And interesting, I watched a movie on Netflix, and it's called Space Sweeper. Oh. It's a Korean movie. It just came out in 2020, or it was made in 2020, came out this year. Mm. And it's supposed to be 2092 in the future. Mm. And these people are a group of individuals go out and do that. They salvage satellites and old space stations and such, and the adventures that they have. And it's sort of an adventure comedy, and it's done very, very well.
What's the name again?
Space Sweeper?
Space Sweeper.
Space Sweeper is on Netflix.
Cool.
What's interesting about it, for a movie, the characters are all from Earth. I guess something happened on Earth and they all live in space. But the dialogue is in English, Korean, Spanish, French, and German. I know. And what was nice, interesting about it as a movie, the characters all had earbuds. And the earbuds would translate the languages. So when you go to watch the movie, you select your language. So all the dialogue in English is not subtitled. But all the other languages, French, Korean, you know, German, is subtitled.
Yeah.
I thought it brought a lot of... I always thought on the Star Trek movies, how come the Klingons spoke English? I mean, did that make sense?
Well, they were being kind to you. You know, they were translating it for you. In actuality, he was hearing Klingon all the time. but you wouldn't like that. It wouldn't be as entertaining.
But I thought it brought a kind of realism to the movie and how they did it. But anyhow,
that is cool. That I like that because you know Google Voice and Translate are going to evolve to the point where that sort of thing will be trivial.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we've used Google already to just travel around where we don't speak the language and get Google Translate to ask questions for us, etc.
But who'd have thunk that it would be our technology that would make the Tower of Babel one again?
But again, it's a great movie. It's called Space Sweepers, and it's actually free on Netflix, so you don't have to pay
for it. All right. We've got it on the list. Okay.
Chasing
Mark.
After Space Degree and Faraway Dreams in 2092, four misfits unearth explosive secrets during the attempted trade of a wide-eyed humanoid. I guess that's the first episode.
Yeah, that's sort of the plot breaker. That they find a robot, a young girl. And well, it turns out she has to go to the bathroom. They figure out she's human. And it goes...
How do you tell the difference between a human and a robot?
Do you have a restroom?
and it kind of evolves from there. Yeah. But no, that's great movie. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the link.
Thanks, Mark.
We'll check it out.
Fun to talk to you.
Still have Netflix. They say, if you like this, you'll love Sisyphus.
Hey, what are we going to do next? We can go to the break.
Let's do the break. I've got some other great stories, but I want to cue them up first.
All right. We'll be back. Motionless me. Nothing is real. Wasting my time in the way.
Now, this story came in as I was prepping this morning. I had other space news, but this got my attention. Viagra may lengthen a man's lifespan, according to a new Swedish study.
Viagra. Oh, boy. It's going to go through the charts.
It may do more than benefit your love's life. A new study finds that the drug can also lengthen a patient's lifespan. The Karolinska Institute in Sweden report that men who have survived a heart attack could prolong their life by taking the drug. In fact, the more often they use it, the lower their risk of another attack.
Huh.
Yeah. So they're just going to, like, take Viagra and live longer, huh? What else are they going to do?
You know, they used to think that older men shouldn't take it because
it would give you a heart attack.
Now they're saying just the opposite.
Yeah.
Now what's going on here?
These are probably the same people who want you to get vaccinated.
I don't know.
I think they're selling drugs.
It's a new use for Viagra. Who owns a Viagra? I don't know. I mean, is that a vaccine company? Hey, what do you think, Bobby?
Well, it got the Nobel Prize, what, in 1996 or something? It's nitric oxide. And nitric oxide actually is a vasodilator.
Yeah.
And that isn't the reason why the chemist that came up with it got the Nobel Prize, but for that. But what's interesting is they're doing treatments for COVID. What they do is they just give you nitric oxide gas and you inhale it in the lungs, and it actually reduces the thrombosis or the bleeding in the lungs in later stages.
So it's a late stage treatment in the COVID regimen.
So you guys are blurring the line between Viagra and COVID treatments.
Well, no, it's just used. A similar drug is used in serious COVID situations.
But nitric
oxide, which is a different story.
It is very important, you know.
It has many purposes in our body, obviously.
But you can do it several ways. If you breathe through your nose, you can actually get nitric oxide into your lungs. And that's, you know, it's a vasodilator that way. Also, you can take infrared light, and it naturally produces nitric oxide. And then...
Really? Infrared light will just create nitric oxide?
Yes. You just put it on any part of your body, and wherever there's blood flowing through, it will actually create nitric oxide in that area.
Really? So if you... Yeah. Can you use that instead of Viagra? Shine a red light on your...
I'll report on that later.
Just curious. Sounds like a good scientific experiment, a citizen scientist experiment. Anyway, but along these lines, Dr. Holtzman, in charge of the study, says that he hopes that men with coronary heart disease do not shy away from addressing this matter with their doctor, because he's really excited about it, and he really thinks that Viagra can lengthen your life. Oh, we have a link to the links page for that.
All right.
Yeah.
Talk about lengthening with Viagra.
Yeah, nitric oxide.
Sounds good.
Okay, just drone swarms were quite fascinating to me. You know, I'm a droney. Somebody likes to play with drones. But there's a very interesting article in Inverse magazine this month about how drone swarms will soon be used for search and rescue operations. And they look at past search and rescue where it would have been useful, which was the Haiti disaster of 2010 with a 7.0 magnitude earthquake that decimated the infrastructure of the country. They had 62 teams, 1,800 people scanning the collapsed buildings, and they were able to rescue 132 people over 11 days. And though their efforts are commendable, if they had had drones back then, they probably would have been even more successful than just getting 132 people. You have a large area that you have to monitor as fast as possible, looking for survivors and victims. So these drones can cover that. A single drone can cover a lot of area just by itself. But if you have a swarm of them, you can cover large swaths and detect motion and movement and signs of life from the drones. like low-flying helicopters looking for survivors from a shipwreck. You can do things with a swarm that should save a lot of lives. And we've often talked about how the drones could communicate with other types of robots that might be in the wreckage. We're looking at the BB-8 style ball robots that you see in the new Star Wars movies. There are a number of real life versions of those Sphero robots, and they could be crawling into the debris looking for signs of life, such as breath, heart rate, with little sensors on board. Those could be swarmed as well. That would doubly increase the chance of finding people before they expire in such dire circumstances.
I guess the idea is the more eyes in the sky, the better.
Yeah.
And on the ground. You could park them there long enough to take note of anything that's moving around.
Yes.
Instead of just having a flyover that it's easy to miss.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I think it's...
Oh, and then you can also program the data that they're sending into a map. You can coordinate rescue efforts.
Yeah. Very useful. And, you know, it's a double bonus because even after they finish their rescue operations, they just change the program on the drones and they can have some entertainment with the drones.
Right. Oh, yeah. Rescue survivors by day and entertain
people by night. Intel has done some amazing things. That's right. Yeah, why not? The drones are versatile, like just like us. You know, they have a body. Why not use it for both work and play? And the play is done by Intel. It's a whole series of programs that allow them to use swarm drones to create amazing 3D graphics in the air that are, as fascinating, if not more so, than fireworks.
Sure. Yeah, well, you actually have quite a few articles today on autonomous vehicles. You have the drone rescue article. Mm-hmm. You also have an article about the safety of autonomous cars.
Yes, that's the Waymo article. Mm-hmm. Yes, Waymo, the company that was financed by Google, has found that they're absolutely convinced that they will save lives with their technology.
They've done lots of studies and they've published lots of data. And the reason that they'll save lives, they believe, is because they can train a computer not to make the same mistake twice.
Yeah. Yeah, because when you make a mistake, you learn if you're an individual, but then that doesn't mean your wife learned it or your kids learned it. You learned it. Nobody else. The computers are different. They all learn something at the same time. So if one learns it, they all learn it. It's the advantage of an egoless state of consciousness. So they are very good at collaborative connectivity.
Well, and also the way that they're being programmed is very effective just because they follow the laws.
Yeah.
Like people sometimes do, but also because not only do they follow the laws, they also have to do all kinds of avoiding of situations that they've learned. So in many ways, they're more careful than drivers and they never stop paying attention.
So. Right. They have those advantages. Yeah. But they're also much stupider than us in other levels.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Right.
That there could be one fatal flaw that causes them all to crash. And that's what we really want to avoid. Mm. It's like, you remember the Tesla crashes a couple years ago, mm-hmm. where they were just rammed right into a white truck.
Yeah, thinking that was a Skyline.
Yeah. Oops. No, you don't want. So it really is an evolving art form. But we're seeing it happen really fast. You know.
Speaking of the evolving art form, the other robot article that you have.
Oh,
is
the
about
tattoo?
The tattoo.
Oh,
yeah.
The tattoo. Yes. Yes. Well, why don't you bring that one up, Mrs. Future? You deserve to initiate an article today.
Didn't I just bring that one up?
You did. That's what I'm encouraging you. Tell us about the tattoo robot.
Well, I am not a tattoo person.
Yeah.
You know, I it looks to me
painful,
scary. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a doodler, and I like to have the freedom to throw the doodles away that I don't want. But sure. I know that it's definitely a huge part of the art world and the art culture and the ritual of people who live by symbols.
So explain for the audience what happened here. What was the big test?
Okay, well, there was, I guess due to COVID, there was a desire on the part of a woman to get the first, I guess, they're using this as a promo for 5D to get the first 5G.
5G.
Yes, thank you. To get the first 5G facilitated tattoo.
Yeah.
And this article is about the development of the machine that allowed the connection of the tattoo artist and the woman. And it's very interesting because the tattoo artist is actually creating a tattoo on a prosthetic arm in London, I think it is. And the recipient is a woman who is in Scandinavia somewhere. I forget.
It sounded like Dutch from what
it looks like. Dutch. Yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah, it was a little like across the channel experiment. a Dutch tattoo artist.
Right.
Well, dude, this is an interesting thing to do because if you are a talented tattoo artist, you could expand your business this way by having robot arms all over the world that know your signature, know how to work with you.
Well, developing this machine, there's a little video here with the article that's just amazing, and you see them developing the machine by trying to put the tattoo onto a butternut squash.
Oh, yeah, you got to practice on inanimate objects.
And the first few attempts are really scary. Like, you know, the tattoo pen just like punctured the first.
Too much pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty bad.
We gave him an infusion.
But I guess by the time they figured it out, they got this woman to, she very much simplified her desire for the tattoo. So it almost looks just like a little logo.
Yeah.
And she did like a surfboard on a wave or something like that, very minimal.
Yeah, something she likes.
And they stretched her skin with Band-Aids. And anyway, drfutureshow.com, you can see it, and we're at the end of the hour.
Yes, and next hour,
Santa Cruz.
If any luck, you'll meet Miss Adventure and her wild explorations of lavas and life and science. And
yeah. We're talking to Jess Phoenix about her book.